Hey everyone, welcome to episode number 8 of Seeking Witchcraft. Like always, I'm your host Ashley, and today we're going to be talking about the Wheel of the Year. So before I start, I want to say two things. One, if you've listened to my previous episodes, you'll know that I have completed an official Gardnerian initiation, so yay! That's exciting. I am officially a lineage Gardnerian witch, so that's cool. But that being said, still everything I pretty much say on this podcast is going to be from my own opinion. It's not going to be anything reflective off the Gardnerian tradition. So yeah, take that with, or do with that what you will. But yeah, so today I actually have a host with me, a co-host. If you want to introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Allison, and I know Ashley because we are in a coven together.
Yeah. So Allison is also an initiated member in the Gardnerian tradition. Mm-hmm. So fun stuff. She knows a lot about the Wheel of the Year, so I'm probably gonna let her do most of the talking. Oh, you ready for this?
So ready.
All right. Okay, cool. So even if this doesn't end up taking the entire 30 minutes, I'm still gonna be splitting up this episode simply so I don't have to rush through all of the sabbats. So today we're gonna cover Yule, Imbolc. There we go. Astara and Beltane. So to start, well, what exactly is the Wheel of the Year? The Wheel of the Year encompasses 8 sabbats or holidays that are generally celebrated by pagans and witches. And no, you don't have to be Wiccan to celebrate. So what do I mean by this? Well, each sabbat corresponds to different cycles in the earth that its inhabitants go through, which I'll discuss in depth a little bit later, or rather Allison will. Wiccans will generally look at the sabbats in regards to the mythology surrounding the god and goddess and their relationship, but if you're not Wiccan, you could still look at it through the lens of the natural earthly changes from the seasons, from like winter to spring to summer to fall. All right, it's important to know that the sabbats aren't always exactly on the same day each year, as the precise moments they happen can change, but they're generally celebrated within a 3 to 5 day time frame. If you're not sure when the sabbat will fall during the year, you know, Google is great. but what I'm going to do is I'll mention the sabbat for the day they fall in for 2019, which will only really apply for Yule for this episode, and 2020. There's a whole bunch of additional information regarding the sabbats and their origins, if they're sun and moon sabbat or greater or lesser sabbat, etc. But, you know, just for the sake of being a beginner topic, I'm just going to cover information on the sabbats themselves, plus something you can do to celebrate. The order of how the sabbats are presented usually have Samhain as a starting sabbat or Yule. But on the next episode, I'm going to explain why Samhain, or it kind of looks like it says Samhain, if you're wondering what I'm talking about.
Yeah, some people call it Samhain if they've never heard anyone else say it before. That's just kind of how it reads in any book.
Exactly. But it is pronounced Samhain. But yeah, next episode, I'm going to explain why it's sometimes referred to as the start of the Wheel of the Year. But today, I'll be starting with Yule. Anything you want to add? Or?
No, that was a pretty good introduction. But yeah, The Wheel of the Year, like you said, is following the story of the god and the goddess, but the god is generally represented by the sun and the light, and the goddess is generally represented by the nighttime and the darkness, and they kind of complement each other. Neither one is seen as better or worse than the other one necessarily. Like, winter is not seen as a bad thing, it's just seen as naturally part of the cycle, and so if you're not necessarily, like, following the theory that it is the god and the goddess, if you just imagine it as daytime and nighttime and sort of the play and trade-off between the day and the night, that's another way to imagine it.
Oh, that's a really good point. Yeah, thanks. Cool. All right, so we're gonna start with Yule. So everyone's probably heard of this one, even if you're just new in your practice. I mean, hello, if you've seen Harry Potter, they have the Yule Ball. So mm-hmm. So Yule is regarded as the first day of the winter solstice, which is also the time of the year where we have both the shortest day and the longest night. The start of Yule generally corresponds with the Western calendar, which is why I'm starting with it first. So that being said, Yule takes place usually sometime between December 20th through the 23rd. In both 2019 and 2020, Yule is going to begin on December 22nd, so that should be easy to remember. The Wiccan belief during this time is that the god, also known as the sun, is reborn from the goddess, who is known as the earth. But The god is still pretty young. He's an infant, which is why the days are shortened. And the earth is pretty still or silent as the goddess is recovering from the labor of giving birth to the god. So if you don't subscribe to that belief, don't worry. Overall, Yule does celebrate the renewal of life through the sun, whether you want to follow the god and goddess story or not. So Yule is a really great time to reflect upon your year, as well as to plan for the future. It's also a really great time to give thanks for the warmth of the sun and fire. And a lot of people do this by lighting candles and having a Yule log. Yule logs are generally logs that are kept throughout the year, or at least a piece of it, and they're burned during the Sabbat. So if you're like me and you do not have a fireplace or a way to burn a log, you can also just take a log and you can drill holes and insert some candles into it. Typically what people do is there'll be three candles they put into the log. So red and green or white or black and gold are some recommended colors. And yeah, they'll just put them in the log and light them that way and let the wax drip down on it. A lot of people also decorate their logs using evergreens, which are like trees or shrubs that maintain their leaves during the winter. Allison and I had a lot of fun trying to find some evergreens last Yule.
Yep, that was quite a time.
Yeah, we went on an adventure for that, but we found some. Mm-hmm. But other examples of evergreens, just like holly trees or pine or things like that. In terms of rituals, there's two that I can recommend that you could do for Yule. The first would be a ritual to kind of just welcome back the sun, although this may be something that would be performed mostly by Wiccans. If you want to do something a little bit different, though, you could do a cleansing ritual, as this is regarded as the beginning of the year, so they're fresh starts. But if neither of these, you know, seem like something you want to do, just off the record, I personally really like the idea of a ritual regarding celebrating like love, family, friendship, and the covenship in your life. The reason why Yule is because Yule is so close to the other holidays like Christmas or Hanukkah, which generally involves celebrating the love between family and giving gifts. This is not an official ritual that I've seen done for Yule, especially since this idea can really tie into almost any of the other Sabbats. But it's just an idea of something you could do if neither of the other two ideas really vibe for you. All right, I'm going to hand this off to Allison, who knows a lot about the other three holidays. So here you go.
So are we going on to Imlek now? Mm-hmm. Okay. So Imlek is sort of a continuation of Yule in a way. It can also be called Candlemas. And Yule is like the pivot point where it's the shortest day of the year. And now the days are getting longer. That's why it's the birth of the god. Imlek is the light is growing now. The days are officially getting longer. You might be starting to feel that like the sun is taking longer to set. Like it's not dark when you're getting out of work or school or whatever. Like it feels like maybe spring is somewhere over the horizon. But Candlemas is a celebration of the god becoming an infant. He's starting to grow a little bit. He's not a baby anymore. And some ways that people celebrate this, hence the name Candlemas, people can give gifts of candles, or lighting candles off of other candles is like a big thing because it's celebrating the light spreading and the light growing. And so it's halfway between the winter solstice and the spring equinox. And, oh, this year it is going to, or in 2020, it's going to be on February 1st. Yeah, and it's close to Valentine's Day because the gift giving of the candle is kind of like a flirtatious thing sometimes where, yeah, so that can be kind of an equivalent to Valentine's Day.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right. I feel like I'm going to go through these too fast.
That's okay.
But Ostara, so in 2020, Ostara is going to be on March 19th, and it is the spring equinox. So usually when people celebrate the spring equinox, it's like March 21st, but it can be anywhere around like that sort of three-day span. And at this point, the god is a child, and he's starting to get older, but there is still like a youthful innocence about it. They're still very young, but it's close to Easter, and even Ostara sounds like Easter, kind of. And Easter, as it's celebrated by most people today, involves bunnies and eggs and things like that. Lots of symbols that are fertility symbols, even though they're not necessarily seen as that these days, because it's like sort of, I don't know, I feel like fertility rituals are seen as, like, very inappropriate, and so we kind of call them something else, and now it's, like, Easter is sort of a celebration of, like, in Christianity, Jesus dying, which doesn't exactly match up with the original pagan celebration of rebirth, but I feel like when they're trying to introduce a new holiday, they sort of have to allow the old holiday to continue to exist in it, because people aren't just going to drop their old traditions and their old rituals. Like, these have been celebrated for thousands of years, and it's the natural progression of the year of things being born, and so you kind of have to let the pagans keep doing their thing and then maybe try to get them to add something else on top of it, as opposed to just dropping it all together.
Rituals.
And so, rituals. Where do we have rituals? So, this is a good time for planting seeds and anything that has to do with growth. So, a lot of people like plant flowers and
herbs and stuff.
Herbs and things like that. It's not necessarily a good time for like hardy crops per se. Like, that's closer to the harvest, is when you start doing the things like the grains and the gourds and stuff. But it's a good time for flowers and anything that sort of brings spring to mind. And also, cleaning rituals are good, like with a besom, a ritual broom, if you want to like sweep all the negative energy or all just like the stale energy from the winter out of your house. It's a good time of year to do that.
Yeah, you're rebirthing, you know, your environment. So, it's good to do some spring cleaning.
Yeah, it's kind of a fresh start. And Ostara eggs are a thing. Sounds kind of like Easter eggs. It's another equivalent sort of ritual that's kind of carried over. A lot of traditions around the world do this, like Ukrainian traditions will like blow the yolk out of the egg by poking like a little hole in it and then do really like intricate design painting on it, or you know, a lot of people just hard boil their eggs and then dip them in the dye, but it's all just sort of a general reverence and worshiping of the life and the rebirth and like the symbols of fertility and stuff like that.
Yeah. Cool.
So, yeah. Shall we move on to Beltane?
Yes, let us move on to Beltane.
Beltane's a big one.
Beltane is about sex.
Beltane is the sex holiday. The definitive sex holiday. There's really
a lot of sex.
No buts about it. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of buts.
But. Yeah, true. So, this one is on May 1st in 2020. And it is celebrating the miracle that is reproduction, the human ability to procreate. It is a beautiful thing that modern Western culture has kind of made inappropriate and unspeakable in a lot of ways. But the most recent equivalent of Beltane can be seen in May Day, which is kind of an old-fashioned thing now, like not a lot of main cities will really celebrate this, but if you go to, like, small towns, especially, like, small European towns in, like, Germany and England and stuff like that, you can still see villages will celebrate with a maypole.
We had a May Day celebration here where I live, which was really cool. And I went, and I was like, I hope there's a maypole, and there was, but they were like, oh, no, that's only for the performers to use. And I was like, well, dang, I wanted to do it, but okay, that's fine.
Yeah, there's a maypole at the Renaissance Fair where I'm from, around Chicago, Wisconsin area, and they let us participate in the maypole, which is super fun. And it's not an outright spoken thing, but the maypole is very obviously symbolic of a penis, and I'm just going to say it.
It's a penis.
It's a penis, yeah. For Ostara, where you have the decorating of the egg and sort of the, like, reverence for that.
Germation.
The maypole is the decoration and celebration of the penis. And in all its glory and for what it can do, which is impregnate, which is kind of what Beltane's about. It's about, like, at this point in the story, the god and the goddess have come of age and now they are hooking up, reproducing, and doing the thing that they are meant to do. Like, that's kind of a major part of what life is about. In order for there to be life, there needs to be conceiving. And so Beltane is sort of taking Ostara to the next level and conceiving. And so symbols of it are red, flowers, and sex magic, which not necessarily as well versed in, but if there is any time to sort of do anything like a fertility spell to help enhance your chances, this is a good time of year, because naturally in the Wheel of the Year, this is a time when, like, the spark of life is in the air, and yeah, it kind of helps give any magic you could be trying to do in that realm an extra oomph, an extra gusto.
I was gonna say that too.
Yes.
So you mentioned one thing about, like, in the story. Like, can you talk a little bit about, like, the Wheel of the Year and how it's, like, a story?
Yeah. So in the beginning in Yule, the reason that... So some might see Samhain as being the beginning, but that's actually kind of, like, the death point, and then Yule is the rebirth. And so it depends on which one you want to see as the beginning. It's kind of like whether you see a new moon or a full moon as being the start of the cycle. It's which came first, you know?
The chicken or the egg.
The chicken or the egg, exactly. So Yule, at least in my opinion, is sort of a good natural starting point because it is the rebirth. It is, like I said before, the shortest day of the year, the day when the light is the smallest, but it is also the day that all that changes. The days are now officially have gotten as short as they're going to get, and now they're becoming longer. And so if you follow the Wheel of the Year to the end, the goddess is incredibly pregnant by the time Samhain comes around, and she gives birth on Yule, and then there's kind of like the death of the goddess or going to sleep, because it is a cycle. Like, she doesn't die in the winter, she goes to sleep, and then she reawakens in the spring. It's all a very confusing story, because while she is growing up alongside the god, and then she gets pregnant by him, she also is pregnant with him and then gives birth to him on Yule. And so kind of plot holes there, but Yule is the day that the god is born, and then throughout the entire Wheel of the Year, he is getting older and growing older by the goddess and impregnating her. So by Imhotep, he is an infant. He is growing older, but he has not come of age yet. It is still a time of year when the days are short, like not longer than the nights yet, but getting there, on their way. Ostara is where he's finally starting to get closer to coming of age, but it's still too soon yet for there to be conceiving. And then by the time you get to Beltane, like, the god and the goddess are both in the prime of their life, ready to conceive. The goddess is moving from the maiden phase to she is going to soon be in the mother phase. She doesn't yet know she's pregnant, but she is being impregnated.
There you go.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, that's pretty much it for the Wheel of the Year, but we're only 17 minutes in, so I guess we could just do a couple random tidbits about something. So if you've listened to my previous episodes, I've actually referenced Allison before on the low. I talked a little bit about wands and about the best way to grab them. So do you want to self-identify that story?
Yeah. So I don't know how thoroughly Ashley covered it before, but I was taught most of what I know about gardenerian craft from my high priestess back in Chicago before I switched to the coven here where I currently practice. So my high priestess there always taught me, like, when I was looking for a wand for my ritual practice, I was asking her, you know, should I do the peaceful sort of thing and take a branch that has already fallen so I'm not disturbing the tree? And she actually said, no, you should take one from a branch live, just ask the tree first. Because her reasoning for it was, if you pick a branch up off the ground that's already dead, it's lost its energy of life, and then it is not going to be a useful tool to you because it has already lived its natural life and is ready to be done with its life and go back to the earth to become nutrients for the next tree that is going to grow. And so there's no energy in that tool. You can't really use it. It's not going to serve you in the way that you're looking for. If you pick a branch off a live tree, you should ask it first. You should generally ask anything in nature before you take from it, like picking a flower and stuff. I mean, you might look a little bit crazy if you're out in a park, like talking to a daffodil, like, is it okay if I pick you? Yeah. Thank you so much. And then, like, how do you know if this daffodil is consenting to you picking it? There's really no way to know.
You just have to feel it.
you got to kind of be intuitive about it. And then also, many pagans will leave an offering in return to nature. So, like, if they pick a flower, then they might go out and, like, water the rest of the flowers that are there. Try to give something back to the earth in return for what you've taken. But, yeah, that all just depends on what you're comfortable with in your practice and how deep you want to go with it. But, yeah, by taking a live branch, you are... And if the tree sort of gives you its blessing to take that branch, then you have the energy of life still in the stick. And so it'll be an effective wand for you because it still has energy in it. It still has life. It is still thriving and will aid you in your practice. And then you also have sort of that nature blessing with it of the tree being like, yes, use this in your craft. I support you in your
witchery,
in your witchery and your nature ways. Go on, pagan fairy child, I support you. Yes.
Yeah, I mean that too, like if you consecrate it right after you take it off the tree, like yeah, yes, I guess the branch would technically start to die, but by consecrating it you're kind of sealing in that energy with it. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, well, is there anything you would tell somebody who is just starting out in their practice and super, super new? Any advice or things they should look into or books they should read? Or,
I would say my advice is look into everything because religion is a very personal journey and it is all about finding what makes sense to you. The reason I was drawn to Wicca is because it's kind of a general all-encompassing, like, all gods are the god, all goddesses are the goddess, and it all fits into just sort of this natural conceptualizing of the positive and negative, the day and the night, balancing forces and stuff. So whatever makes the most sense to you is what you should go with, but also keep in mind that no one is more correct than the other. Like, gardenarians get a reputation for being kind of like traditional by the book, hard asses about it, and... It's not that we think we're right, per se. It's just that the ritual helps aid in the creation of sacred space. But you can definitely have a valid experience with any religion. It's all about how you're feeling it, if you're feeling it, if it's working for you, if it makes sense to you, and if it speaks to you. I remember when I was first starting to practice with my high priestess in Chicago, she had me watch this documentary about this guy who pretended to be, like, a guru teacher from India, and he had all these lessons, and he was preaching to these people, and they got so invested in his message, and at the end of, like, a year or so of practicing with him, he revealed to them that he was just a regular guy. He had made up the entire religion, all the lessons he had come up with on the fly, and he was kind of BSing them the whole time. And some people got up and walked out of that room, and some people stayed in there and were like, well, no, I really felt what you were saying and feel like I learned something from you. And after I watched that documentary, I turned to my high priestess and I was like, why the hell did you show me this? What is this?
Yes.
And she was like, this is sort of a representation of, like, you don't have to stick with Gardenerian if you don't want to. You can practice Alexandrian, you can practice Blue Star, you can practice Dianic, you can go back to Christianity, you can practice Muslim beliefs, you can be Jewish, whatever you want to be. If you're feeling it, then that's your experience and that's valid and no one can take that away from you. So
true that.
Yeah, that's just my nugget on it.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, any parting words or?
Oh, thank you for having me as a guest on this. I'm so excited to be a part of it.
Absolutely. Thank you for helping. Yes. All right. Well, that's pretty much it for this episode, guys. I hope you enjoyed it. Let me know what you thought of Allison. I'm super excited that she got to come on as a co-host. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll, you know, rope her into helping me with another episode.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe. Aw. Yeah, maybe part two of Wheel of the Year. I don't know. We'll see.
For sure, yeah.
We
got to finish the story. I know you're all on the edge of your seat wanting to know what happens with the god and the goddess next in their soap opera of the year.
There you go.
Spicy.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, as always, you can hit me up on Twitter at SeekWitchcraft. And, yeah, if you have any questions or anything like that, hit me up. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.